A battle charge drumming through her veins, Celine flew down the shadowed steps, careful to pause at each landing, ensuring not a soul was within sight. The moment she reached the ground floor, she stole a glance at the portly sergeant managing the front desk, watched while he took a sip of coffee from a stained mug, listened to him cough and clear his throat before he poured a splash of whiskey into his cup. With a small smile, Celine crept along the wall until she arrived at a bolted side door. Taking great care to unlatch the brass lock without so much as a sigh of metal, she slipped through the opening and into the night. Once more, she waited beneath an eave, on the lookout for prowling gazes. Triumph settling on her face, she took a step onto the darkened path, her ears filled with the sound of chirping insects, and her eyes locked on the elegant expanse of saw palmettos in front of St. Louis Cathedral.
Marceline.
The voice at her back was low, accented, unthreatening. Nevertheless, it frightened Celine to her core. It had been months since she had heard her full name spoken aloud. Though she did not recognize the voice offhand, its owner pronounced the three syllables with unmistakable purpose. As if he knew how she took her tea, as well as the last occasion she'd prayed to anyone for anything. Celine froze mid-step, her heart galloping through her chest like a spooked horse.
Mais pas peur,
the voice reassured from behind her, its baritone rich and clear.
I am not here to harm you.
For a rash instant, Celine considered running. But something told her she would not get far. The fine hairs on her neck stood on end, as if she had been sighted through a rifle's lens, eyes surrounding her on all sides. Though her fingers trembled, Celine managed to unsheathe Bastion's silver dagger before pivoting on a stockinged heel. From a fall of nearby shadow emerged a slender gentleman, wearing a felted top hat and a suit of darkest blue. The walking stick in his left hand was crowned by a solid gold lion, his pocket watch fashioned of gleaming Spanish bullion. When he removed his hat, Celine stifled a gasp. She recognized this man. It was the young man in the oddly colored painting above the fireplace in the suite at the Domaine, the one that had haunted her from beyond the four-poster bed. He gazed at her, his expression calm and collected. Then a slow smile unfurled on his cultured face. It startled her, for it was like watching a statue come to life. One second his expression looked still and smooth, as if honed by the hand of a master. The next second, everything softened, making him appear almost human. Almost. Like Arjun and Odette and all the other members of the court, this man was not entirely human. Celine would bet her life on it. She said nothing, as he appraised her in silence. Despite the disbelief flaring through her, Celine knew at a glance who he was. Who he must be. Bastien's uncle, Le Comte de Saint-Germain. With nothing to do but return his unflinching study, Celine scoured his features for similarities, as if it would calm her. The Count stared down at her with the same exacting precision as his nephew, the line of his jaw no less cutting. His brow was as dark and expressive as that of Bastien, the tone of his skin several shades lighter. Celine took in a sharp breath of warm night air. The Count must have been no more than a boy himself when he assumed the task of raising his nephew. The painting in the suite at the Domaine could have been completed yesterday, for Bastien's uncle did not appear to be a day over 25. Impossible.
I am Nicodemus Saint-Germain,
he interrupted her thoughts. His accent was difficult to place, though his words were lyrical and precise, as if he had been an elocutionist in a past life. When he shifted, into the faint glow of a distant street lamp. A current of fear chased across Selene's skin. Even the way he moved took her off guard, like he was limned in smoke, or deliberately, moving slower than usual, as one would with a cornered animal. On instinct, Selene lifted the silver blade in her hand as if to ward him away. A breeze blew past her, shocking her still, riffling the loose tendrils of her hair and the hem of her wrinkled skirt. Before Selene could blink, a figure came into focus. One second, nothing was there save a swirl of darkness. The next breath, a man stood in its place, fully formed, as if he had always been there, a watchful specter in his own right. Jay, the member of the court bastion said, eliminated dead weight. Whatever that meant. The graceful young man from the far east loitered between Selene and the Count, short blades in either hand. When he twirled one dagger across his fingers, Selene caught sight of something she'd missed before. Countless tiny scars on the backs of his hands, the markings raised and faintly white. Her gaze traveled upward to note the same scars on the side of his neck, reaching just above his starched collar. There did not appear to be a design to the markings, for they had been sliced at random, some of them cross-hatched, every one of them painful to behold.
In the ancient China, Nicodemus San German began in a conversational tone. There was a time when capital punishment was inflicted by a means known as lingxi, or the death of a thousand cuts.
Selene shrank backward a single step, then stood straight, determined to hold her ground, despite the fact that every fiber in her body wanted her to flee.
Jay Yuk was caught some years ago on an errand in Hunan, Nicodemus continued. He barely escaped with his life. I am thankful every day he is by our side.
Jay stared into nothingness, unblinking and unbreathing, as if he had no desire to feign even a semblance of humanity.
I prize loyalty above most things,
the Count said.
And Shin Jayuk possesses this quality in spades.
Inhaling to quell her nerves, Selene said,
Monsieur le Comte,
I'm not certain what...
Sebastian is not for you, Miss Rousseau,
Jay interjected, his voice no more than a whisper.
Have a care with your heart and your life.
The first cut. Indignation took shape in Selene's chest. She opened her mouth to retort when a noise resonated from the darkness at her back. The thud of approaching footsteps. She fought the urge to shudder the instant a pair of willowy figures glided past her. The two young women with the unforgettable rings. In the starlight, their gems sparked like wildfire, their skin lustrous and dark, their silk skirts immaculate. Bastion's uncle watched Selene as they passed.
Madeleine de Morny is the most gifted tactician I've encountered in my life. A rival of Napoleon himself. Her younger sister, Hortense, sings like a songbird and dances like the wind.
The Count leaned on his walking stick, gripping the lion in his palm.
But, above all, I prize their candor. Madeleine is honest to a fault and Hortense incapable of deceit.
Selene gnawed at the inside of her cheek as the two women came to stand at the Count's right hand. Madeleine de Morny stared at Selene without batting an eye.
Bastien est trop dangereux pour la santé, she warned. Be smarter than this, mademoiselle.
A wicked smile unwound across Hortense's face.
À moins que vous soutiez joyeux à l'imbécile.
Cuts two and three. Another gust of wind blew from Jay's back, fanning through his long black hair. Whistling from the shadows, Boone sauntered toward them, his hands in his pockets, his cherubic curls splayed across his forehead.
"Ah, darling," he began when he met Celine's gaze. "I was hoping it wouldn't come to this."
"Let me guess," Celine said. "You're here to tell me to stay away from Bastian."
A rueful expression crossed his face.
"I would avoid it if I could. I like you, Celine Russo. You vex Bastian greatly. Bet you cut your teeth on it."
He grinned, then his features soured all at once.
"But we just lost Nigel. We can't afford to lose anyone else."
Excellent points, Monsieur Avenel. The loss of one among us is indeed an agonizing blow.
The Count agreed in a soft tone.
As always, I appreciate your support and your wisdom.
Again he returned his attention to Celine. A fourth cut. Despite her rising irritation, Celine felt herself start to curl inward, the fear threatening to overcome all else. The next instant, she forced herself to rally, to channel the goddess Celine, who lorded over the night sky and all its countless stars.
"Monsieur le Comte, I've heard much about you over the past few weeks. It's a pleasure to finally make your acquaintance."
Though Celine tried her best not to sound cheeky, she knew she'd failed the moment Boone snorted and Hortense cackled.
"Comme une reine de ténèbres."
Hortense repeated her words from that evening at Jacques, amusement coiling across her features. Celine almost laughed at the absurdity. If she was a queen of anything at all, she was Marie Antoinette, on her way to meet the guillotine. To his credit, the Count merely smiled, his amber eyes gleaming.
"And a pleasure to make yours, ma chérie."
In an ideal world, Celine should be striving to charm Bastian's uncle. But that chance had vanished like smoke in the wind. After all, only a fool would try to charm a man whose first inclination was to threaten her. Nicodemus Saint Germain had, without a doubt, succeeded in frightening Celine with this show of bravado. But she had no intention of cowering in his shadow.
"I do not wish to be disrespectful, Monsieur le Comte. But you claim to prize candor, so I submit that there's no need to belabor your point."
She glanced pointedly at his gathering retinue.
"It's clear you don't find me a suitable companion for your nephew. But in fairness, you know very little about me."
"On the contrary, I know a great deal about you, Marceline Beatrice Russo."
Again, her full name echoed in her ears, the sound carrying high above the soughing treetops. And again, her heart raced behind her ribs in response. Soft laughter fell from the Count's lips, as if he could sense her mounting fear.
"Until recently, you resided with your scholarly father on the third floor of a small flat in Montmartre."
He took another step forward. Celine could not help it when she eased backward in tandem. Her body made the choice before she could reason with it. Nicodemus continued.
"And worked under the tutelage of the famed Camille de Beauharnais."
He paused with meaning.
"In the uppermost floor of her atelier, beneath a lace of shimmering chandeliers."
The thudding of Celine's heart clawed into her throat.
"He knows." Her worries invaded her mind. "He knows."
The two words raced through her brain in time with her pulse. She fought to maintain her composure, her fingers gripping the silver dagger, her nails digging into her palms to the point of pain.
"It's clear you've learned much about my past, monsieur. You obviously have great resources at your disposal. But these details do not necessarily inform my present."
Nicodemus's smile was punishing.
"I've heard you also enjoy being reckless, venturing to places you've been forbidden."
lying through your teeth, and flouting the rules.
Color flooded Celine's cheeks. To which rules do you refer?
The only ones that matter.
Mine.
His last word was the point of a knife in her back. Celine refused to be intimidated, though her knees shook beneath her skirts. A new emotion crossed the Count's face, one she could not recognize. As Nicodemus studied her, a line formed across the marble of his forehead. The next instant it smoothed, vanishing from sight.
I admire your fearlessness, Celine. More than anything I could learn about your past, I can appreciate why my nephew is so taken with you. Not many young women would dare to hold their own in the company of so many who could kill her without a second thought.
He stepped forward again, the end of his walking stick striking the pavers beside his feet with a decisive thwack.
Who would kill you at my command? Without a moment's hesitation.
The trembling took hold of Celine. She bit down on nothing to prevent it from reaching her teeth. There was nothing for her to say in response. Bastian's uncle had just stated in no uncertain terms that Celine continued to breathe at his leisure. A cheeky retort would serve no purpose here. The only thing she could do was stand firm. Refuse to quail or beg, though her jaw clenched tighter with each passing second, her muscles tensing in preparation to fight or to flee. After all, Celine Rousseau was not a mewling calf marked for slaughter. She could hold her own if need be. The boy she'd killed for daring to treat her like a conquered thing was testament to that fact. Her last breath on this earth would not be tinged in regret. Of that, Celine was certain. The Count glowered into the night as if he could read her thoughts, his posture immovable. A mountain beneath the moon.
I, too, have heard the whispers of how you're not afraid to spill blood. But you must know that I, too, have no qualms about destroying something in my path.
Why do you persist in threatening me, monsieur?
Celine gripped her skirts, the handle of Bastian's dagger cool in her palm.
What do you hope to accomplish?
Another flash of that same unreadable emotion. If Celine didn't know better, she would have sworn it to be admiration.
I don't threaten people, ma chérie,
Nicodemus said.
I trade in favors. If there is something I can do for you, you have but to ask.
Celine almost laughed. Now he was offering her his good favor. It appeared that Bastian had learned his chameleon ways from his uncle.
I don't want your money, monsieur.
I would not insult you by offering something as uninspiring as money.
May I ask what you want in exchange for earning your favor?
The Count did not hesitate.
I want you to reject my nephew. Cast him aside. Better still if it is for someone else.
Celine blinked.
Why do you object to me so?
Her gaze narrowed.
Is it my lack of fortune or family?
As I said, I am not so uninspiring. Your lack of fortune is indeed a nuisance. But not of the insurmountable kind, were you suitable in other respects.
His words blistered Celine's ears, mortification thrumming through her body.
In truth, I am most concerned by two things. You are far too inquisitive. And you have already become a weakness. I dislike seeing weakness in my nephew. Especially for something as inane as human emotion.
Celine chose her next words with care, aware her cheeks had started to flush.
It is not a weakness to feel, monsieur.
I am not a weakness.
It is a weakness the moment one's feelings override one's judgment. And love of any kind is a weapon to be used against you when wielded by the right hand.
A part of Celine agreed with him. There were many times in life when she had fallen prey to her emotions and erred in judgment as a result. Then she recalled the threads of hope she'd clung to during the long Atlantic crossing. You should want your nephew to find love, my lord. When life becomes difficult, the only source of strength we have is love. Love of others, love of self, love of life in its entirety. Nicodemus nodded.
And what is love, ma chérie? A choice or a feeling?
Taken aback, it took a moment for Celine to respond. It is a feeling. She angled her head upward, biding time while searching for a better answer. As if it had been waiting for this moment, the moon emerged from behind a cloud bank, surrounded by a bevy of stars. Celine stared at the count with determination. Love is looking at someone as if the stars shine in their eyes. He nodded again.
A beautiful notion. But you are wrong, ma chérie. Love is not a feeling. It is a choice. Contrary to popular opinion, there are many paths to happiness. I must ask which one you will choose. For the path you are on now will bring you only pain.
The count took a final step closer until he stood just before her. Close enough that she could see the colors swirling in his amber eyes and smell the strange, icy scent emanating from his skin, like frosted mint.
You do not belong in this world, Celine. It may be beautiful, intoxicating even. But beauty is a danger to behold, for it often masks the decay lurking beneath. Esa finitu chaud dans le sang.
And it always ends in blood. I am not so captivated by the beautiful, monsieur. Celine met his gaze without wavering. For I know beauty is only a moment in time.
All right you are,
Nicodemus murmured. Then he placed his walking stick before him, both hands braced on the golden handle.
Nevertheless, I must send along my nephew's regrets. He will be unable to meet you tonight as planned.
I gathered as much, Monsieur le Comte, Celine said.
Don't take it to heart, mademoiselle. My one goal in life is to protect my legacy. Do as I ask. Reject Sebastian. Hurt him once, now to spare you both a life of pain. If you abide by my wishes, I will grant any favor you ask. And you'll find there are no limits to my reach in all matters.
He paused, the line marring his forehead once more.
Defy me, and you'll find your worst fears have become your reality. I will make sure you are left utterly alone, Celine Rousseau. Left to face everything you've run from with no one to blame but yourself.
His words struck Celine like a blow to the face, as if the Count had peered into her very soul and unmasked her greatest fear of all. She flinched when a final gust of wind preceded the last arrival. The one she'd been expecting for quite some time. She'd braced herself for it, knowing this wound would cut her to the quick. But that did not lessen the sting. She felt it keenly, like a string snapping on a harp, the sound reverberating deep in her bones. Odette did not meet Celine's gaze as she moved into position at Nicodemus's left. Her shoulders were rounded, her features somber. But still, she came to stand beside Bastian's uncle, her steps unfaltering.
I'm sorry, mon ami, Odette said, her sable eyes downturned. You are my friend, but they are my family.
With this final cut, the Count drew an invisible line in the sand. Celine could trust no member of the court. It was laughable to think their loyalties could ever be with her. If Nicodemus ordered them to leave her to her fate, to fend for herself, no matter the circumstances, they would do as he asked.
Michael had already refused to use Celine as bait.
If Nicodemus prevented Bastian from helping Celine, she would be utterly alone, as the Count had promised. With a killer lurking in her shadow.
Perhaps I'll resort to praying once more. Her thoughts turned grim. In the premier pew of St. Louis Cathedral, where all the best sinners take refuge. Awareness prickled through her limbs. Come with me to the heart of Chartres.
Knowledge kindled within Celine, its cool light surging through her veins. She knew where to set her trap. And the devil take her if she would wait for a boy to defy his family before she made plans. She would do, as she always did, whatever needed to be done. In Paris, Celine Rousseau had struck down her attacker in his prime, with no one to depend on but herself. She'd traveled half the world to start a new life, with not a single promise on her horizon. And no one, human or demon alike, would stand in her way now.
Hiver, 1872. Jackson Square, New Orleans, Louisiana.
I believe tonight will end in blood, and I alone know for whom. Maybe she will trap me with her evil little mask, her clever little mind. It will all be for naught, for she knows not what she does. Love is proof that blood alone means nothing. I am thankful my blood is thicker than oil. Et brille plus fort que le soleil. And burns brighter than the sun.
Beautiful decay. Celine had lived and breathed French fashion for the better part of 5 years. In Paris, she had learned the importance of one's choice in garments. How it spoke for a girl, perhaps before she was able to speak for herself. Clothes opened doors as surely as they closed them. On a practical level, the way a young lady chose to dress indicated not only her station in life, but where she wished to go. There was an art to dressing. Of all the reasons to love fashion, Celine had fallen in love with this one the most. The idea that she could drape her body in colors to match her soul. How a simple dress could convey her hopes and fears and dreams. How bolts of silk could be molded into armor in the right person's hands. This was the spirit that had inspired Celine to create the gown she wore now. It was completely unsuitable for the event in question, yet perfect in all other respects. The battle regalia of a lunar goddess. Or, perhaps, an homage to a queen of darkness. Celine smiled to herself. Sometimes a girl must make her own magic. She filled her lungs with the sultry air of a warm evening. The last of the afternoon showers had ended just before the sun sank below the horizon. All the packed streets of New Orleans glimmered like newly polished silver, the air smelling of iron and smoke. Her hand swept over a pool of mirrored water, the black taffeta whispering in her wake. Just beyond the arch of the main entrance to the Orleans ballroom, Celine paused mid-step. For an instant, she imagined it to be the exact spot the Marquis de Lafayette himself had once stood. Though it was unlikely he would have arrived to a fete 2 hours late. Celine had needed the time. She'd spent most of her waking hours sequestered at police headquarters, finishing her costume. Just yesterday she'd managed to complete Odette's ensemble. She'd even attempted to deliver the garments to Jacques, only to be rebuffed at the door by the same Titian-haired individual who manned the lift at the Domain. After confiscating her parcels and rendering payment in full, Yvonne had turned Celine and the officers in her company away, a self-satisfied sneer on his face. Consequently, she'd been denied the opportunity to see Bastien or perform a final fitting on Odette. Her first glimpse of the finished costume, a daring hat tip to Madame du Barry, would be tonight when she saw Odette at the ball. Celine hoped her friend would delight in her surprise as much as she had delighted in creating it. From dawn until dusk, Celine had poured her efforts into the black taffeta confection she wore now. It had begun as a gown of mourning, the kind readily available in any dress shop. She'd taken it apart and pieced it back together in a nod to the Baroque silhouette. Within the gown's skirts, she'd incorporated the first set of wide pannier hoops the carpenter on Rue Bienville had fashioned. The overall effect wasn't perfect. Perhaps if she had had more time, Celine would have added more flounces. She might have trimmed the black lace dripping from her pagoda sleeves into something more dramatic. But even in its imperfection, it was her, for better or for worse. Reckless, incomplete, and inappropriate. But here, all the same. Celine rested her right foot on the bottom step, taking a moment to steel her spine. Bastien's uncle would undoubtedly be present tonight, as would several members of Le Coeur de Lyon. Still, Celine was uncertain if Bastien would be in attendance, so soon after Nigel's death. The masquerade ball at the Orleans ballroom was to be the soiree of the carnival season. His absence would be noted among those in society. Would this be enough to ensure his presence? Celine hoped it would. All the best and brightest of the Crescent City were sure to make an appearance. This year's theme had been announced at the culmination of last year's event. 12 long months of anticipation for a tribute to the dazzling courts of Louis XV and his son Louis Auguste, in that glimmer of time just before the French Revolution. Every invited guest had been instructed to garb themselves in white, from head to toe. And here Celine stood, in nothing but black, from the domino on her face to the tips of her dyed slippers. Save for the silver dagger concealed beneath her skirts, of course. This should have frightened her. In Paris, it would have been shocking to contemplate such a thing. But Celine was not in Paris anymore. Nor was she the same girl who'd fled the atelier that terrible night, her hands bloodied, her features frantic. That girl was a creature of distant memory. One unsure of her place. Her toes lingering on a step leading into the unknown. Celine mounted the stairs. Tonight she wasn't a girl afraid to face her choices. She was a goddess, baiting a trap to catch a killer. Her shoulders back, Celine glided beneath the arched doorway. Just beyond the entrance awaited two liveried gentlemen wearing powdered wigs and buckled shoes, their white stockings gartered at the knee, just beneath their tight breeches.
"Password," the one to the left said, his eyes glazed with boredom.
Celine did not waver.
"Capitian."
While the other guard opened the heavy doors, the man to the left sent Celine a quizzical look.
as if he wished to say something and lacked the right words. She smiled to herself. That was the truth about proper society. They made all these rules, never planning to apply any consequences to themselves, never expecting any of their ranks to stray from the established course. With an imperious tilt to her chin, Celine turned sideways to accommodate her wide-set hoops, then breezed through the doorway into what could possibly be her last night on this earth. It had been her first thought when she decided to remake a dress intended for mourning. If this was to be her last evening among the living, she wanted it to be the most glorious night in memory. She would live one night as Selene, a titan who dragged darkness with her wherever she went. The jet beads along her bodice shimmered as Selene swept beneath the domed ceiling of the ballroom, ignoring the looks of surprise and distaste flashing nearby. She marveled at the countless chandeliers reflected in the polished marble at her feet, filling the room with a buttery glow. A makeshift court had been positioned around an ornate throne, festooned in ribbons of purple, green, and gold. In its center stood a bearded gentleman in his early 20s, his white regimentals embellished with braided brass, a smile of smug satisfaction winding across his lips. Celine supposed him to be the fate's honored guest, the Russian Grand Duke, Alexei Alexandrovich. Under normal circumstances, she might have been impressed by his imposing mien. But tonight, she was a goddess, and a goddess did not concern herself with the triflings of men. All around Celine, couples floated in dazzling circles, whirling in the familiar triple time of a waltz. Their white garments lent them the appearance of pillowy clouds spinning through a golden firmament. The best of New Orleans society had powdered their wigs and faces, the scent sweetly suffocating alongside the towering bouquets of hothouse flowers, all chosen for their angelic hue. Even the servers bustling about with their trays of bubbling champagne had rouged their cheeks and lips, black beauty marks affixed beneath their right eyes. Celine watched the Crescent City's finest dance in their powdered costumes, feeling their eyes upon her. The whispers behind the ivory fans, the looks of male disdain, along with the occasional wink of sly approval. None of it mattered. This was a different kind of freedom from the one Celine had longed for on the journey here. A different kind of power. The ability to see through a beautiful veneer and appreciate the decay beneath it. Now that she had had a taste of such power, she never wanted to go back to before. Was the killer lurking among these dancing clouds? If he was, Celine had made certain he would notice her. She was counting on it. Her gaze snagged on a figure across the way, a young man who had stopped in his tracks, his gunmetal eyes fastened on hers. He stood above the crowd, his black hair shorn against his scalp like Julius Caesar. The gold filigree trimming his mask contrasted with the dark bronze of his skin. His ivory jacquard waistcoat shone in the warm candlelight, as did the intricate soutache around the gilt buttons of his silk frock coat. He took a step forward and stopped, his satin breeches clinging to the sinew of his body, his head angled with admiration. Heaven forgive her, but Bastien was beautiful, dangerously so. At his back stood a handful of preening young ladies, their papillote curls perfect, their expressions covetous. But he had eyes for one girl alone. A low hum resounded in Celine's ears. It heated through her veins, the blood coloring her cheeks. Bastien bowed slowly, one foot in front of the other, his right hand swooping downward in tribute to the period. When he stood once more, Celine could not help but smile.
Bastian returned her smile without hesitation, his eyes like glittering coins, an unspoken promise on his face. Then he melted into the crowd, unconcerned with those around him. If Alexei Alexandrovich presided over this heavenly court, then Sebastian Saint-Germain was the prince of its shadowy counterpart. With this thought, the last of Celine's fears dissipated. She knew Bastian would help her catch the killer tonight, in defiance of his uncle's wishes. She was certain of it. Lucifer was hers the moment he returned her smile. Was this love, then? If it was, Celine wanted to bathe in it, to luxuriate in this feeling of knowing, without being told, that someone saw her amid the beautiful decay, saw her and stood by her side against the very world itself. The next instant, her shoulders tensed. Through a parting in the crowd, Celine caught sight of Pippa's unmistakable profile. Again, her petite friend wandered through the ballroom on the arm of Phoebus Devereaux, amid the creme de la creme of New Orleans society. Pippa met Celine's gaze, then turned away, her expression cold. Though it stung, Celine was grateful. It was better for Pippa to be angry with her. Anger kept her far from the killer's line of sight. Odette spun past Celine on the dance floor, laughing as she careened in Boone's arms, her skirted mantle swaying on the ingenious panniers. When they turned, Celine noticed the matching breeches she had designed as a surprise. The gown of Odette's costume split in its center, revealing her figure as she swirled to the music. Her ruby-encrusted brooch sparkled in the candlelight, pinned in the middle of a gentleman's cravat. A mixture of the masculine and the feminine. A perfect representation of both Odette Valmont and Madame du Barry, the courtesan who helped rule a kingdom. Again, Celine smiled to herself. Even if Odette never said another word to her, Celine knew her friend was grateful.
Mademoiselle Rousseau,
a familiar voice announced behind her right shoulder. Celine twisted around to meet the amber eyes of a tall, masked figure. The black domino across her face shifted, obstructing her vision. She took a moment to straighten it, her pulse thudding through her body. Monsieur le Comte, she replied with a curtsy, her nerves tingling in her fingers. Bastien's uncle held out a white-gloved hand.
May I have this dance?
A knowing smile ghosted across his lips, as if he were the serpent offering Eve the apple. Celine slid her hand in his. The next moment the world blurred around her, candle flames streaking along the edges of her vision. Nicodemus danced as if he'd been born to it. To all of it. The wealth, the debauchery, each of the glittering chandeliers. When he reeled them around the first bend, his steps smooth and precise. Celine closed her eyes for the briefest of instants, wondered what it would be like to put her trust in an otherworldly creature like this. Her eyes flew open. This world of dark magic might intrigue Celine, but she knew better than to take a bite of its fruit.
A daring choice,
the Count commented, noting the way her black skirts rustled around them in time with the music.
I appreciate young women who turn up their noses at society.
All evidence to the contrary.
Fear would not dictate her actions tonight.
Sebastian must treasure your sharp wit.
As they say, monsieur, she replied. One man's treasure.
Another smile rippled across his face. His teeth blindingly white.
Touché, ma chérie. Touché.
They danced in silence for a spell.
Have you had a chance to consider my offer?
He asked.
I have,
she replied, in equally noncommittal fashion. Something glinted in Nicodemus's golden eyes.
Tell me, Mademoiselle Rousseau,
Have you ever heard of a game called Chatrange?
Taken aback by the odd question, Celine missed a step. I'm afraid I have not, Monsieur le Comte.
It's a Persian game of strategy. Not so dissimilar to chess. Legend has it that it was among the favorites of the famed storyteller Shahrzad.
It troubled Celine to realize he'd stolen the upper hand with such a seemingly innocuous question. I've played chess before, but I am not proficient. My father always let me win.
Chatrange is one of the precursors to chess. I'd be pleased to teach you how to play.
His grin was sharp.
You may rest assured I will never let you win.
Merci, Monsieur le Comte. I accept your generous offer and hope to prove you wrong in all respects. Nicodemus laughed, the sound savoring strangely of fatherly approval.
If you've taken time to consider my offer,
he spun them in place.
What request do you have of me?
Such arrogance. Such presumption. Salim pretended to hesitate before answering. After much consideration, I think it would be best for me to leave New Orleans. She did not have to be proficient at chess or chatrange to know that gifted players anticipated their opponent's moves and planned accordingly. The Count's grip tightened on her hand.
You would leave the city without a glance back.
It's possible I could be persuaded, she demurred. There was a moment last week in which I wished I could forget everything and simply disappear. The Count considered her for half a turn around the ballroom.
If you mean that in earnest, I could help you.
I'm certain you would be more than happy to help me disappear, monsieur, she joked.
His expression took on a thoughtful bent.
I meant I could help you forget.
You could help me forget?
Nicodemus nodded once.
It is the work of a moment. You would feel nothing, nor would it cause any lasting damage.
He spoke as if he were inviting her to a picnic on the lawn of his country estate. It unnerved Celine beyond words. And how would you explain this sudden bout of amnesia?
I do not keep secrets from my nephew. Sebastian would know it was your choice. As such, he would come to respect it.
The strains of music died down, the bodies spinning around the ballroom slowing to a halt. Her mind in turmoil, Celine laughed with false abandon, joining in the applause as the song came to an end. Bastian's uncle was a man with the power to steal memories. The thought alone frightened Celine more than anything he had said thus far. It forced her to change tack, for if she lied about leaving New Orleans, what would stop him from robbing her mind with a snap of his fingers? Moreover, if she were to disappear afterward, not a soul would question her absence, given her decision to quit the city. She would be alone and adrift once more. No. It would be safer to negotiate a way to remain in New Orleans. Celine took Nicodemus's proffered arm and strolled with him toward the fringes of the ballroom, taking time to construct a new plan. Monsieur le Comte, I must apologize. When I said I thought the best thing for me to do was leave the city, I meant it, for it is the most rational approach. She paused. However, as you've already pointed out, my emotions are a weakness. I've found that I've come to love New Orleans, and I do not wish to leave. She shuddered as if a wave of fear had passed between her shoulder blades. But I have no desire to relinquish my memories, nor do I wish to engage in battle with you. So I have an offer, if you'll allow me to stay. The Count folded his gloved hands before him, his expression unreadable.
You would not demand Sebastian choose between us.
Bastian has already lost most of his family, Celine said. I would not wish for him to lose you. She bit at her lower lip. So I will reject him as you have asked.
Nicodemus said nothing for a time.
And what request do you have of me in exchange for rejecting my nephew?
I have three. Celine hoped her greed would convince him of her sincerity. I would like a finished pied-à-terre in the quarter, as well as a dress shop nearby for me to earn a living.
And the third request?
Celine focused on his amber eyes, fighting to convey a sense of earnestness. I want to tell Bastian myself, without any of your spies or henchmen nearby.
Why would you think I would agree to such a sentimental request?
Because, despite everything, you like me, Monsieur le Comte, Celine replied without flinching. And you love your nephew. Bastian is your weakness. I'd wager it must pain you to cause him grief. Another unreadable emotion crossed his face, the silence stretching thin for several breaths.
When did you wish to tell Sebastian?
Here was the most important question he had asked yet. Celine maintained a flat affect while answering. I suppose it depends on how soon you wish to see this matter at an end.
Tonight, then.
It was just as she'd hoped. If you wish, Monsieur le Comte. Nicodemus sent her a wry look.
Love is indeed a weakness.
He leaned toward her right ear.
And I do like you, Marceline, also. Most especially when you do what I want.
The brush of his threat curdled her spine, sending spiders scurrying across her skin. Celine smiled to mask her fear. I understand.
Sebastian will meet you on the terrace in 20 minutes.
Two sides of the same coin. The scent of dying flowers wafted past the open doors, weaving towards Celine. It reminded her of the praline vendor who idled on the corner of Rue Bourbon and Rue Toulouse every Saturday, Christmas bells on his wrists and ankles, a homemade pipe dangling from his lips. Beneath the moonlight, the travertine balustrade at her fingertips glowed a pale shade of pink, spidered with veins the color of dried blood. Vines of bougainvillea and peach begonias wrapped around the terrace railing, dew glistening on their downy petals. From this vantage point, Celine considered her next move. She'd successfully secured what she most wanted, a moment alone with Bastian. As a result of the Count's efforts to keep them apart after Nigel's murder, Celine had yet to share what she'd realized while studying the clues on Michael's slate chalkboard. Come with me to the heart of Chartres. At the very least, it was possible she'd learned the location of the killer's lair. What they should do with this information remained to be seen. She'd considered taking it to Michael, but he'd already refused to help her once, and the New Orleans Metropolitan Police had thus far been stymied in all their attempts to catch this otherworldly demon. Celine didn't know how much time Nicodemus would give them now. Would it be enough to secure Arjun's or Odette's help as well? The prospect seemed unlikely. Bastian might be willing to defy his uncle to catch Nigel's murderer, but it would be foolish of Celine to expect the same of anyone else in the court, especially given their recent encounter outside police headquarters several nights ago. No matter. Celine intended to use every second of her borrowed time with Bastian, especially if it meant they might lure the killer into the light. Several other couples mingled at the edge of the balcony. A trio of young women huddled together, laughing at bawdy jokes. Their levity brightened the tenor of Celine's thoughts. For an instant, she even considered joining them, especially when she overheard one of their ranks speaking in animated tones about Odette Valmont's costume. How Sebastian Saint-Germain's scandalous lover had dared to wear fitted breeches beneath her open mantle, as well as a gentleman's cravat. Mischief gleamed in one girl's brown eyes. Whom do you suppose wears the trousers in bed? Neither of them if they're doing it correctly, the young woman next to her replied. Zut alors, the last girl cried with delight.
Despite everything, Celine could not help but laugh. She'd meant it when she'd told Nicodemus she liked it here. New Orleans was a world of contrasts, a city of life and death, a raw and rich tableau. It suited her. She traced her fingers along the stone balustrade, sketching through the thin layer of moisture collecting along its surface. A pair of footsteps came to an abrupt halt over her shoulder, too close to be by chance. She turned at once, her words swallowed by a gasp.
Pippa!
Alarm scalded through Celine's body. Anger pinched her lovely friend's features. I came here because I wanted to tell you something.
Please, you can't be seen with—
No, Pippa interrupted. This time, you will be the one to listen. Celine tugged her deeper into the shadows, glancing about wildly, her features tight.
You don't understand, I—
No! Tears pooled in Pippa's eyes as she wrenched herself free.
I don't want to give you a chance to offer me an explanation. You've wounded me. Immensely. I've worried about you every day. A single word or note would have sufficed. But you've cut me out of your life, and I won't pretend to know why.
She gesticulated as she spoke, her lace sleeve snagging on the elegant silver frogging across her baroque stomacher.
Oh, bother, she moaned.
Let me help, Celine said, reaching for the lace. Pippa moved to stop her. The next instant her shoulders fell, her sigh one of defeat.
Blast it all, she muttered.
I came outside intent on making an impression, yet here I am in your debt. Her wig of powdered sausage curls slid down her brow, the cross on her golden chain catching on a loose tendril.
And to make matters worse, I look like the ghost of Christmas past.
Don't fret. A smile tugged at Celine's lips. I'll be sure to heed your warnings, no matter how portentous. Cutting her gaze, Pippa sighed once more.
I need you to know how angry I am. And that it doesn't matter if you ignore me or push me away. I'll always be here, Celine. I love you dearly, and that doesn't change simply because you're behaving like a wretch.
She yanked her wig straight, a cloud of powder diffusing about her head. Celine detangled the last of the snarled lace.
I love you dearly, too. And I'm beyond sorry for behaving like a wretch, she said in a soft voice. Please know I have my reasons for keeping my distance. One day soon I'll tell you everything.
I'll hold you to that promise, Pippa nodded. But never forget that I am here, if ever you need me. A lump gathered in the base of Celine's throat.
I won't forget.
Ever. Pippa nodded again, her expression turning morose.
I suppose I should return to the ball. I sent Phoebus for some refreshments, and only a total lummox would get lost on his way to the punch bowl.
Is Monsieur Devereux such a lummox?
Celine teased in a gentle tone.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean.
Pippa cast her an arched glance.
But if you meet me for tea next Thursday, I'm sure, together, we can divine the truth.
A part of Celine desperately wanted to be the kind of girl who could make plans next Thursday with a dear friend. But she had no idea what the next hour would hold, much less the next few days. It seemed that, no matter where she went in the world, these two warring sides of her were destined to come to an impasse. Two sides of the same coin. For Celine was every bit the girl in a jewel-toned dress who longed for the love and laughter of an afternoon tea, just as she was every bit the girl in black, her heart filled with murderous designs, intent on bringing about a killer's demise. Could two such opposing forces ever coexist in the same soul?
I'd love to have tea with you next Thursday, Celine replied with conviction.
The best she could do was hope. After all, hope was its own kind of magic. The sky darkened to a deep purple as the minutes passed. Celine waited at the edge of the balcony, staring up at the stars. She didn't know when she had first realized how much the sight of the moon soothed her. Perhaps it had something to do with her mother. In the far reaches of her mind, Celine recalled walking along a rocky shore as a child, hand in hand with a lithe figure whose black hair fell past her waist in thick waves. In this memory, her mother sang to a full moon, the melody carrying over the inky water, unfurling into the vast sky above. Perhaps it was a dream, nothing more. A branch snapped in the treetops to Celine's left, drawing her from her thoughts with a sudden jolt. Molten energy coursed through her veins, her skin glowing hot like embers stoked to flame. Celine's eyes flitted in all directions, fear making her aware of every breath, every scuttle, every sigh. She focused on the grove of looming oaks, her heart careening in her chest. A lone owl burst from the shadows, its wings beating in time with her breath. She almost laughed. Her fingers trembled as they moved to the bare skin of her throat in an effort to soothe her raging nerves. The next instant, silence fell around her like a hammer on an anvil. The birds stopped stirring in the treetops. The cicadas ceased with their droning. A dull roar echoed in Celine's ears when she twisted toward the open double doors at her back, intent on making her way inside. Before she could take a single step, the suddenly mute individuals along the balcony crowded her path. They turned to leave in concert, their expressions blank, their footsteps rote. The trio of girls from earlier linked hands, their eyes glassy as they filed toward the double doors, the last of their ranks pausing to latch them shut behind her, the locks falling into place with an ominous click. Was this Nicodemus's doing? Panic thrummed through Celine's body. What kind of dark magic was this? Had Nicodemus lied to her? Was he toying with her? Had he made false promises of his own, all along intending to rid himself of Celine at the first opportunity? Suddenly, each of her memories became that much more precious. She thought about hitching up her skirts and fleeing, considered racing toward the latched doors and pounding on their oaken surfaces, bellowing for help. How badly would she injure herself if she were to jump over the balustrade? Celine had planned to lure the killer to the location of his first murder, to hem him in along the docks, taking advantage of the open spaces and the stretch of water at their backs, thereby thwarting his attempts to escape. And if that didn't work, she was determined to root him out of his hiding place in the heart of Chartres. He was not meant to trap her. Was Nicodemus the killer? Had Celine quite literally waltzed into his clutches? Her chest rose and fell in rapid succession, the whalebone of her stays laced tight. The only recourse Celine had was that if she screamed loud enough, someone inside was sure to hear her. But would they reach her in time? Celine planted her feet, rooting her convictions. If this was to be her one chance, she would take it. Her fingers moved toward the hidden pocket at her hip, pausing a hair's breadth from the handle of Bastian's silver dagger. A murder of crows burst from the branches to her right. She spun around, watching them soar into the moon, wishing with all her might that she could sprout wings of her own and take flight. Just then, Celine noticed a strange set of markings along the edge of the balustrade. Her feet carried her closer before she had a chance to think. Four symbols had been inked into the travertine stone, their edges dried to match its veins, their centers a wet, brilliant crimson. L-O-U-P. L-O-U-P. A strangled sound emitted from Celine's throat. She backed away, colliding with a wall of stone. Shock took hold of her when a pair of long arms reached around her waist, gloved hands running up her ribcage.
Mon amour,
he rasped behind her ear, his cool breath washing across her nape.
You're mine forever.
Celine opened her mouth to scream. Something sharp tore into the side of her neck, and she was consumed in a dark void. A pound of flesh. Something was horribly wrong. Bastian had known it the instant his uncle had come to him, a warm smile on his face and an unsettling light in his gaze. The moment Nicodemus had offered Bastian a chance to speak with Celine on the terrace, in private. No member of the undead granted such a boon without first exacting an excruciating price. Especially a theatrical immortal like Nicodemus Saint-Germain. Once, years ago,